It's Sunday morning. Time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Thank you so much for listening this morning. I'm going to cover a variety of subjects this morning to do with, first of all, starting off with the economics and what is happening with the Pittman-Robertson funds, otherwise known as PR funds, which have been a major source of funding for state fish and game and natural resource agencies, there being one and the same, across America for over 50 years. PR funds are the revenues derived from the sale of firearms and ammunition in America, and the tax goes to fund outdoor recreation and the purchase of lands for the purpose of outdoor recreation, primarily focused on hunting. And PR funds over the last 15 years have been become an increasingly large percentage of each state's budget for the purchase of lands for the purposes of hunting and also for the management. So give you an example, in 2013, there were 10,844,000 guns sold in the United States. That was up 222% from just after 9/11. Impossible to believe that we have more than 222% in a period of 12 years. So what we have seen is, as you've been reading about, basically it's the arming of America. And these are not guns that are primarily being purchased for hunting. Long gun sales, as they're known, hunting weapon sales, really have not accelerated that much. It is personal protection guns that have been such a big part of this boost in gun sales. And that all began to turn the day after President Trump was elected. So the meteoric rise, if you will, of gun sales in America that occurred over a 12-year period to where we reached almost 11 million guns a year, is now turning the other way fast. So the reason for that is the perceived threat of individuals of having their gun rights taken away has been lessened. And the reason I'm talking about it this morning is because it coincides with the bankruptcy of the most stable gun company in America, that being Remington Firearms. Remington has gone into bankruptcy. That's not new news, but the news really is how it went into bankruptcy. And that is because, they did not see an end to this incredible increase in the manufacturing and sale of firearms, and they did not see the Trump election coming, if you will, and states have not seen this either. And so we are now in a situation, and Illinois, believe me, will be a poster child for this, where the Department of Natural Resources will say, oh my goodness, we're suddenly running out of money. Our PR funds are down by 30 or 40% from where they were in just 2016. That's likely to be a real number. And so the amount of funding the state of Illinois received is many million dollars a year. You knock that off by 20, 30, 40%, and the state is going to definitely feel that in the Department of Natural Resources. So none of the states that I have talked with or am aware of, as PR funds were dramatically increasing, none of them viewed this as something that might come to an end. It was literally the Department of Natural Resources. This was just a manna from heaven, if you will, given to them that they were benefiting from. And now all across America, states are seeing a decline in PR funds as the public is not as inclined to run out and buy firearms because they don't feel their guns or rights are threatened under President Trump as they were under President Obama. And it's been joked many times, and I didn't make up this line, that President Obama was the best gun salesman in the history of the United States. because of what happened and the fear of gun rights being taken away in America. And that, as you know, if you've listened to me for a long time, that's not a bias one way or the other. It's not a statement one way or the other. It's just a fact. And so now we are seeing a complete turnaround in the firearms industry, and the states are wondering what happened to their money. What happened to their money is not as many guns are being sold. So what's going to happen to us as the constituents of states? We are going to see a pretty significant decline in the management or the acquisition of areas to hunt and recreate in the outdoors, because the states are not going to have PR funds. The other thing that is unbelievable that was allowed to happen is that as the PR funds were increasing so dramatically, we permitted Congress change the law on how PR funds could be used. It was very narrow, and it was very straightforward. You buy land, you manage hunting areas. All of a sudden, PR funds now can be used for the acquisition. It can be used for education. They can be used for putting on hunter safety courses. And by broadening the description of what's eligible, we have, of course, watered down the impact of PR. I, as an individual, was very much against the watering down of PR funds, but this national move to have education of people to be aware of the virtues and values of hunting and to introduce people to hunting through programs of hunter education and hunter training is sweeping the country, and PR funds sitting there were a likely target. So in a way, we're going to see a watering down of PR funds, which have been so important to the states, and we're going to see less revenue. So the subject of PR funds, Pittman Robertson funds, it's really, really bad news. Shifting from that, I'm going to talk about technology, which is changing very quickly how we can monitor birds and birds' movements, and it's absolutely fascinating to watch this. And it's going to be a huge boost to our ability to understand the migratory habits of all kinds of birds, from warblers and bluebirds to waterfowl to anything we want to study. We are now able to implant in birds radio chips where we can follow them real time, 24/7, for more than a year. So we see the entire life cycle of a bird taking place before our very eyes in real time. And the biggest study of this kind is being undertaken by the Delta Waterfowl Foundation and Dr. Frank Rauer, who is leading a study on the migratory habits of ringneck ducks, which are a sort of a bellwether species of waterfowl for certain areas of the country. And in this case, they are following them from the coasts of Florida and South Carolina to their breeding grounds. And what they're finding is that the ringneck duck is not going to where they thought it was going to breed. And this is there's some maps being developed that are incredible. The same thing is happening for mallards. And I'm going to take a quick break. And when I come back, I'm going to describe where this might go and also the use of drone technology on the breeding grounds to understand the habits of birds and the habitats of predators. And when we sit here in 2019 listening and talking about this, I would venture that 5 years from now, we have a knowledge base of migratory birds and the nesting habits that is so far beyond where we are today, and we're able to do it in such a more cost-effective way that we are using technology in an area where it, until now, has really had very little impact. So I'll be back in just a moment. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN, and first a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
In the field, hunters need to be alert, sense the environment around them, and know exactly where they are, communicate seamlessly with their dogs. And when it comes to pickup trucks, you want the same qualities. The all-new Chevy Silverado comes with an available 4G Wi-Fi hotspot for seamless communication. It's designed to handle the toughest loads with advanced trailering technology, tough on the road and off. And the all-new design gives you more cargo space than the competition. Chevy Silverado is the most dependable, longest-lasting, full-size pickup on the road. Plus, there's never been a better time to see your local Chevy dealer about the Big Fix lease. It's an amazing lease deal that can lower your monthly payments and give you more Chevy, all for less money. That's a treasure hunt. So head to your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and see why Chevy is the number one best-selling brand in Chicagoland, now 8 years running.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Before the break, I was talking about technology and what it's going to do to be able to understand the movement of birds and the nesting habits of birds. And this is coming really, really quickly, and there are going to be some websites very soon that you can go to track the migration of birds in real time. And it's just fascinating to see. So what the first big test is with the ringneck duck, as I mentioned, coming out of Florida and out of South Carolina, and it is erasing the preconceived notions that we had about how these birds migrate and where they go. And it was thought that birds from the Atlantic Flyway primarily went up the East Coast and nested in the Maritimes, up into Canada, Labrador, and over into Quebec and a little bit of Ontario in the case of the ringneck duck. And an entire population modeling scenario has been developed over the last 50 years by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the Canadian Wildlife Service based on that. But guess what's happened? We are finding that the ringneck duck, which winters the largest concentrations winter actually in Florida, they travel west by northwest, and they nest in the Northwest Territories. They nest in Saskatchewan. They nest in Manitoba, Alberta. And very few of them, some do, but very few of the birds that are wintering on the south coast of southeast coast of the United States actually migrate to eastern Canada. Instead, they do what so many other bird species do. They head west by northwest, and they end up in prairie Canada, and they end up in the Dakotas. So this ability to follow birds, whether it be a warbler or a bluebird or whatever it's going to be, is going to give us so much better information about how these birds live and how they die and what's important on the breeding grounds than we ever have had before. Following up on this is the use of drones, which are now experimentally underway by the Fish and Wildlife Service through the Delta Waterfowl Foundation and others, and universities, LSU, to determine how birds nest, where they nest, and what their nest success rate is. So often in the case of waterfowl management, we have had teams of individuals literally walking the breeding grounds of the prairies looking for bird nests, putting little flags next to the nest, and then coming back a few weeks later to see if the nest survived. We're not going to be doing that in the very near future. We'll be flying drones, which have heat-seeking cameras. They can detect a bird nesting on the ground. They can detect the species of it. They can take pictures of it. They can know exactly where it is on a GPS location. They don't have to walk around. No one's walking around planting flags. And what we have learned is that the scent or the trails created by humans, even if they only go there once, are like a guiding light for predators, raccoons, and skunks in particular. They follow the human scent, which leads them to, of course, a nest, and they predate the nest, and that's the end of that. So it's possible that some of the work that we have now on the nesting success rates of waterfowl, which are very, very low, have actually been influenced by the interference of humans monitoring, and that our trails or our walking, if you will, to find a nest actually helps lead predators to that nest. And it's not too different from if you think about you're walking through a field of unmowed grass and there's a deer trail or a trail in front of you that maybe somebody else took, even if it's not a very established trail, just some broken down grass. The chances are you're going to follow that trail. And I know this from having grown up in farm country in Illinois, and we go out in the woods and we walk across some prairie fields, we always take the path of least resistance, and that is where something has walked before you. So it makes great sense that we have been potentially increasing the predation rates in areas where we are monitoring nests by monitoring them through visiting them. Drones won't do that. Drones obviously are in the air. And the other thing that's going to be involved here is it's going to save a great deal of money because there are far fewer people involved once we perfect this technology. And again, it's in the very early stages, but I wouldn't be surprised at all within 5 to 7 years if drone technology is not the widest used method for monitoring all kinds of wildlife populations. It's changing so quickly, and that is of enormous benefit to all of us who want to learn as much as we can about the migratory patterns of birds and how birds live. And also, it's going to be effective for us in understanding how animals live. And one of the studies taking place is how raccoons are effective at predating nests on the prairie breeding grounds. And so drones are able to follow at night because raccoons give off heat. They're able to follow at night the movement of raccoons, which has never been able to be done before. And one of the early things that we're finding, this is to me really kind of remarkable, it's a great opportunity, we are finding that the raccoon densities on the prairie breeding grounds of the Dakotas and southern Canada, where so many of the birds in North America come from, up to 80% of the birds are dependent on that region, more than 70% of waterfowl nest in that region. We are finding that raccoon populations and therefore predation rates are the largest in areas where there are abandoned farm buildings, where there might be an old plow lying in a field, where there might be a tire laying on the ground, anything that represents the presence of humans that gives raccoons and skunks, by the way, neither of which were native to the prairies because they couldn't live there because they didn't have habitat in which to live because the winters were too harsh. Anything which gives them the opportunity to have shelter and den is a place that they will live. So when you drive across the Dakotas and northern Iowa and up into Canada, and you see an old farm tractor sitting in the field, or you see an old building of some kind falling down, and there are tens and hundreds of thousands of these structures dotting the landscape, that's where the predators live. And that is where the predation rates are the highest. So one of the things being considered by conservation groups, and now in fact the province of Manitoba, is can we remove from the landscape man-made structures that have been abandoned or old equipment that has been just left in fields, and what impact will that have for the betterment of nesting birds? It's a terrific opportunity in front of us, and again, it's because of drones and the ability to follow wildlife movements at night that we're understanding how animals have adapted to human being on the landscape. And then in the case of the prairies, where we've had such an emptying out of the prairies because of consolidation of farms, how animals are using the old buildings and the old farm equipment to their advantage, but certainly to the detriment of wildlife. Next week when I come back, I'm going to hopefully talk with Dr. Stan Garrett of Ohio State University, who is the preeminent researcher really in the world on mammals and animals and diseases. And we're going to talk a little bit about Australia and the feral cat situation in Australia, which is gaining international attention and why it's very much relevant to the United States as well and to all of us. Thank you for listening this morning. I hope you've enjoyed the show. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.